Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is The Dave Glover Show with Dave, Rachel, and Kevin. Sponsored by Michael's Flooring Outlet, the flooring experts. IGotFloor.com.
Thursday on DGS, it's 204, Hancock and Kelly, plus Junior. Hi, Junior.
How's it going?
What's it like watching these two go at it like that?
No, it's great. It takes me back. I remember, you know, when I was much younger, listening to the radio. I'm like, who's this guy on him? Why is he being mean to Dad? And now it turns out he's a great guy.
Yeah. And you're like, gosh, and he's right.
Yeah.
No, I don't think
that was right. Well, that must be one of your other family members.
I was good to have you. Thanks for hanging out. We're gonna talk some football later in the hour, because I know that's your area of expertise. I'm a sports nerd, so we'll look forward to doing some NFL stuff in a little bit. But I want to throw this at you guys. I told you before the show I wanted to do this because we're about to flip to the new calendar year.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is a lot less about policy than it is about procedure.
All right.
What's an election year like for you guys? Like, and has it changed? Because I feel like election season never stops. I feel like this presidential campaign has been going on for 17 years. Like, it never stops. Yeah. It feels like it never stops, but what changes when you actually get into an election year, or does it?
I don't know that much changes from my perspective. I mean, what Kevin, when one election ends, meaning that we have the actual election day, it's not but a month or two after that the next one starts. You got to start thinking about candidates that are going to run. And so, much like a football coach, you know, we're putting together plans a year out, sometimes 6 months out. And then during election year, you're essentially just executing on those plans. Now, you have to do what I call surfing. I don't know what John calls it, which is you've got a plan. You've got your surfboard. You've got your plan. You're executing it. But waves are going to come. And you've got to be ready to pivot and move and be prepared. But now we're just kind of into the execution mode. It may be a little early, though it's still raising money. But the plans are there. The thought process is put in place, and now it's just implementing the strategy.
Game time.
Yeah,
it's game time now.
Totally.
Yeah, for me, I've been doing this a long time, and so there are off-year cycles and presidential cycles. So we're in a presidential cycle.
So is this bigger?
It's bigger. Well, yeah. It's bigger in Missouri because it's also the gubernatorial cycle.
Right, right.
And, you know, two out of three of those, you'll have a U.S. Senate race, too, in the state. So this is a big year for me. I've been intimately involved in governor's campaigns, or, you know, even back to my own campaigns back in the day for 30 years. And up until Trump, I was very actively engaged in both of the George W. Bush campaigns. I worked 11 states for Romney in 08 when he wasn't the nominee, and then was very involved with Romney in 12. So the presidential component of that is different. I don't have anything. I haven't had anything to do with the presidential race since 12. But very involved in the governor's race here in Missouri, and I love the presidential cycle because it's so consequential, and there's so much to do, and there's a lot of big things at stake. And it also, in terms of public policy, this is the cycle that leads to what will become 2025, which should be, from a public policy standpoint, the most consequential year of a four-year cycle in terms of legislation at the federal level, at the state level. Stuff gets done right after a statewide or presidential election in a way that it doesn't get done in any of those other three years. So it has big meaning in that regard.
Which means we're going into the year that's the least effective as it relates to governing.
Nothing happens except the lead up to the election.
That's it.
Yeah, and most of the bills that are introduced for show.
Yep.
They're extremist to kind of entice whatever constituency you're trying to fire
up. Just like you can say, I tried.
Yeah.
This is something I pushed. How about I know I've asked you guys, and I think you have made very strong arguments against what I've asked about is like limiting the influence of money in politics. And I think you guys have answered those things very well and made very good points about it. What do you think about systems that limit the amount of time you're actually allowed to campaign? It's like, for example, in the UK,
right?
You can't campaign all year. It's against the law.
They call the election and they have the election. Well, our elections are on the calendar.
No, but I mean, like, you have a, but even when they are scheduled, you have basically a month. You're allowed to campaign for
on
a month.
Television and that's it. And
right. I mean, you can go around and speak to people. You can go do that, but you can't run ads. You can't do all that. Well, is that just because they have old ways of doing things, or is there anything to that?
They don't have the First Amendment. We do. And the First Amendment, I don't think there'll ever be any limitations on campaign because campaigns are essentially speech. And oddly enough, did you know that England doesn't have the First Amendment?
I mean, no, they have
freedom
of
the press, but I mean, you can't just walk out and say, "Hey, you're a bum, King."
You're risking it. Back in the old days, you probably. I'm always fascinated by that nation. Like, I'm fascinated by why they still cling to some of the old when the day to day is the new.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, we're still a baby. Like, as a nation, we're still a baby.
Yeah.
We haven't been around here. One.
Well, baby's always a little chunky, right? That's why they come get the term baby fat. But, like, we're still really new compared to almost every other nation on Earth as far as just being. Maybe there are governments that are newer, different political leadership. Obviously, it's different in Russia than it was under the Soviet Union. Like, those things have changed, but Russia's been there forever. We've only been here as a nation for a couple hundred years, a little more than a couple hundred years. I'm interested in that dynamic, just how we are still very new, yet we're still the biggest influence on the planet.
We are today and haven't always been, but we are today and probably we won't always be the dominant influence on the planet. And in fact, some of that debate is really, I mean, when you peel away all of the showbiz and the over the top rhetoric and, you know, part of the debate in this country right now, certainly just within my party, is what role should America play in the world? And there's a growing fundamental divide there. There's a whole lot of voices emerging, and you think about Donald Trump, Vivek Ramaswamy, another one, that really believe that America is best served focusing in on ourselves, disengaging from action in the world, curtailing our interdependence globally for the economy, becoming a self-sustaining manufacturing island in the world. That's an isolationist mindset from the 50s and before. That's really beginning to emerge. Rand Paul, another one of those voices in the Republican Party, versus those that are that believe that the world is better, safer, more functional if the United States is an active participant and leading the world. And that's a debate that's happening right now in this country.
Yeah, and I don't know what the answer to that is, but as an American citizen, I like when we're making the decisions as opposed to others. There's a political thought process, and I'm going to bastardize it a little bit here, but I'll get the general points right, that if you go back and look at the empires of the world, that they always have gotten shorter, whether it be the Greeks to the Romans to the Persians to the blah, 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 to the British. Many people would say we're in the American age of the empires, and it will be one of the shortest of all of those empires, which means that China may be the next emerging empire. And their reign may be even shorter.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by the idea there because, I mean, in general, everything's speeding up, right? Change speeds up as technology speeds up, which I think would lead to I think that's if that exists, that's probably why. Because when you look at the beginning of the Greek reign or the Greek, dynasty to the end of it, there wasn't much change.
Oh, well, you were writing it down in stone.
Right. There wasn't much scientific change in the world. We were the same. I mean, human beings. For tens of thousands of years, and then I wouldn't say all of a sudden, but progress is going to multiply, right? It's always going to be faster, 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 because each innovation makes something move faster. So change is going to come along with that. So I don't know that that's necessarily I think that's correct. I don't know that it's necessary. People see it as a negative. I don't think it means we're doing anything wrong. It just means that's how fast things can change. I mean,
yeah, but like, we don't need to be helping perpetuate it. I mean, right now, one of the things that Russia and Iran just announced is they're no longer going to participate in trading in dollars. They want to change the trading to whatever they call it in China. I don't know.
Yuan.
And that's, you know, needs to be concerned. Once we quit trading in dollars, right now the world is communicating on our level. Why would we want to surrender that? Why would we want to allow the China, which is why I don't understand why we want to let Vladimir Putin take over Ukraine or Hamas, you know, take over Israel. This is all going to be an assault on essentially what is American exceptionalism, which used to be something we were all supportive of. Hey, and in your world, I think the same things happen from sports with golf and LIV. I mean, what's ultimately happening with the golf is they're trying to topple the dominance of the American empire in the world as it relates to world sport and recenter it around the Middle East and the Far East.
Here's the thing that I've been reading a lot about this, just given things that are going on in the world. And I've found a few people that are retired military intelligence people who have really analyzed the quote enemies of the U.S.
Uh-huh.
And they're not a threat to us. China's not a threat to us right now. They have bodies like in the military, but they have I'm trying to remember the number, but like people are like, well, they have a larger Navy. Yes, in terms of number of boats, but in terms of tonnage, in terms of what this boat carries, they're not even close. Like militarily, nobody's close to the United States.
Sure, but I don't think China's threat and ultimate way to topple America necessarily is military. They make everything for us.
Well, sure.
We can't function without them
but
creating.
That makes them reliant on us as well. Because if that's my point, because they can't, you know, somebody, we just played this audio maybe a week or two ago, but this idea that somehow China owns the United States and could come calling, they don't, they can't call on their debt. They have bonds. The bonds mature at a certain maturity date. They can't just call us and say what you owe us, you have to give us now. It doesn't work that way. And they only own like 4% of the national debt. Most of it is owned internally. Most of it is owned within the United States.
Well, now we're monetizing that. We're not even selling the bonds anymore.
Right.
The global economic threat that China presents, I think. I've looked at what they are doing in Africa over the last decade or more. And China is a very long-range planning society.
Sure, sure, sure.
And, you know, I think they believe they can grow a consumer class in Africa over time that would make the consumer class in America much less important to them, potentially.
And they're making inroads in Brazil as well.
No question.
But I mean, are we talking 200 years?
I don't know.
How long before poor countries have the buying power the United States has?
I don't know.
And there's a reason.
Those poorer countries have our resources.
Natural resources.
Well, there's a reason. Which is why they're there, too.
There's a reason why President Xi was here, though. Because their economy sucks.
Yep.
They're getting hammered. And what they ended up doing was they overinvested in real estate, and now it's all tanking. They have a massive unemployment problem. So China's economy is way worse than ours right now. And yet we hear people treat it like, oh, look out, China's coming for us. They can't. They literally can't. And they are as reliant on us now. If we were to pull out and say, we're not buying anything from you anymore, they're done. Because Africa's not ready to buy that stuff, and Brazil's not ready to buy that stuff. And I mean, I think we do a little too. I'm not saying we shouldn't be long-term planning, like you're saying. Mm-hmm. We should obviously be taking care to not put ourselves in vulnerable positions. But nobody in that is in that kind of. I mean, Russia's a disaster.
No, Russia's not a threat.
They're a disaster. Right. Iran can't project any power outside of their own borders, other than what they do with funding terrorist groups. And I'm not saying that we don't have opposition and that we shouldn't. I'm saying we shouldn't be looking at it like, oh, my God, China does not want us to go anywhere. Not now. Maybe 100 years from now. But we have a lot of time to make sure we don't allow that to happen. We are in a position at this moment where we are still in control.
Well, but the decision makers and some of the things that we're up to right now don't give me great hope.
Well, and here's the short-term threat that China poses. They have hegemonic designs over all of Asia. That includes Japan, ultimately, and certainly to the east, Taiwan. And That's a more imminent threat that we face, and how we respond to that and deal with that. Do you just let that happen? And if you just let it happen, what's the impact of that globally and economically and every way else? It's they're a real threat.
Hi, everybody. I'm Maury Povich. On my podcast, On Par with Maury Povich, I'm going to sit down with the icons, the stars, and the faces at the very center of today's big cultural moments. With everyone from comedians Josh Johnson, Dan Soder, Leanne Morgan, to newsmakers Don Lemon, Joy Reid, Aaron Parnas, and so many more. So join me for new episodes every week, because nothing is off limits. Great conversations. They're always on par. Follow and listen to On Par with Maury Povich wherever you get your podcasts.
These weeks are weird. Like, this week between Christmas and New Year's is always weird to me. Like, real world is kind of back, but not really. Like, you know, stuff's open. It's not closed like it is on the holiday itself. Although even now, there's more things that are open. When, like, we've driven on Christmas Day to go out of town to visit people.
Yeah.
And the truck stops are open and things like that, where years ago nothing would be. But this is just that weird in-between time where it's back, but like, you pull into our garage and there's nobody here.
Right.
It feels like being here on a Saturday, but then normal thing, other thing, you know, banks are open. Everything else is kind of normal. I don't know. It's a weird
kinda
week.
Though, but I mean, a lot of the big manufacturers and the big buildings that, you know, owners, they shut down between Christmas and New Year's. But you're right. The banks still go. The market still goes.
The post office.
Yeah. Well,
still delivers the mail.
Yeah, I don't notice a difference. I don't know if I told John this. My office, about a block and a half from here, we maybe get mail 3 times a week. The mail that comes 6 days.
I would think you guys would get a lot just given what you do.
Oh, yeah. No,
they don't deliver
when it comes.
It
shows up in boxes.
Okay, okay,
but,
okay.
I mean, I'm lucky to get mail to show up three times a week.
Is that something that you think is going to go away?
I hope not.
Mail?
Like, just in general, like, the post office is really what I'm talking about.
People in jail.
I'm talking about the post office, not just deliveries, right? Mostly because, I mean, like, aren't they getting killed? Like, every year they're losing money and it's almost impossible to keep up. And so much of what we do now is electronic anyway. Like, I don't pay any bills using the mail. I pay my bills online. I don't send my favorite uncle a letter. I send him a text or an email. Like, I feel like that's kind of going away. Is that something that's going to be one of those things like, hey, you remember that service that used to take anything you want for a sticker?
Could. It'll take a long time. That's a deeply rooted institution, the U.S. Post Office.
Yeah.
And
it's still the best deal in the world, too.
Oh, no, it is. But that's
60 cents, you can send something from here to L.A.
Yeah,
tomorrow.
That's kind of why I'm wondering if it's going to have to go. I don't mean like I want it to. I'm just saying I just wonder if it's one of those things that eventually is going to be like, yeah, we can't do this anymore.
Maybe.
We can't keep up.
I mean, could it be privatized or something like that? Potentially. A lot of people say that the post office would be able to sustain on itself if it wasn't for a lot of the obligations it has with the federal government, et cetera.
I'll tell you what's interesting in our world, politics. So you got to a place, you know, part of every campaign is the direct mail campaign.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
You're sending literature out and so forth. And 25 years ago, when everything was coming through the mail, your political stuff would get lost or it gets tossed immediately. Now, you may only have 4 or 5 pieces of stuff in your mailbox on a daily basis. And if one of them is a oversized political print thing, and I've seen numbers on this, people are more likely to read political mail today than they were 25 years ago.
Really?
Yeah.
Like actual mail?
Yeah. Just a, right.
Wow.
Because it's something to read.
Yeah, and maybe they trust it better because I'm skeptical of almost everything I read online anymore. I'm like,
right.
Okay, is this
is it
legit?
Real? Yeah.
Is this really the New York Times website or is this some ghost site or blah, blah, blah?
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I'm not going to lie to you guys. I don't read any of them that come to my house.
Yeah.
They just go recycle.
Yeah.
So living in apartments, I always get mail from the prior tenants.
That keeps coming in.
And there are new names that pop up. Probably have been there. You have collection letters coming in looking for some guy I'd never heard of. And just hand it to the front desk and say, hey, do what you need to do. Throw in the shredder. I won't tell anyone.
Yeah. I live in a building, too, and I get a lot of mail for people that used to live there and et cetera, whatnot. Yeah, I don't know what you're supposed to do with that mail. I usually just take it back down to the buildings like where you would mail stuff and, like, throw it in there, like, hey, dude, this,
just hand it to the front desk. And
right. Well, that's when you fancy up there in Chicago. You got a front desk and a doorman. I say, Jeeves, will you please pull around my car? I'd like to head out to the...
My building just sold, though, and I guess the previous door staff was too expensive, so they fired everybody, and the new people are just much, much lower quality.
Wow. Well, help was hard to find.
You could be a business opportunity. Door staff.
The doormen, the door people. We're progressive in Chicago. It's not a door.
Yeah, but just the point is that you have a staff for your door.
I'm
my own door staff.
I've got a door staff. His name is Gus.
is he a welcoming door staff?
Well, if he knows you.
Really?
Yeah, if he knows you.
So, like,
you.
He doesn't know me. If I showed up at your
house.
It
would not be good.
Oh, really? What would he do? Yeah.
Is he a fighter?
He's not a fighter.
Non-stop barking.
Should I just bark
at you?
You
and assume your intention was to, kill everyone
He thinks every package that comes to the door is a bomb.
So, like, but if I walked in, if I came over, just knock, and you're like, oh, come on in, have a drink. He would not be okay with that?
He would bark. Now, it's the problem. You would have a worse problem if you stood frozen at the doorstep.
Yeah.
But if you just walked in and acted normally, then his explosion would be, and he doesn't bite.
He just barks.
Just barks.
You'd have to nail the first impression.
So, like,
10
if you, so, like, because I've been in that situation many times. I'm fine with dogs. I know I can tell when they're being actually mean versus just, think they're doing their job. So if I just walked in casual, kept calm, and grabbed a treat of it, and handed him that, and then
the treat's over. It's over. At that
He's
point.
Good.
Yeah.
See, because I have little dogs, right? I have two little 13-pound little craps, and they go nuts. People walk in, they bark, 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 but they want you to sit down so they can jump on you.
Yeah.
Because they love people.
Yeah.
Like, they will bark until you sit, and as soon as you sit, they're like all on top of you, trying to say hello to you. And I've had all different kinds of dogs, and I've been around all of them, and usually. It's the people that just act normal that don't have any problems.
That's right. That's
if you
exactly
just
right.
act normal and you don't, you
but
don't,
if you freak out at the dog, it's all over. Game over.
He just thinks he's the boss. Then.
Yeah. So don't do that, Wheels.
Yeah. If you guys come into my house, just sit down. And the dogs will stop barking because they'll be jumping on you.
Yeah, I'm not a dog person.
You'll love that.
Imagine
Mike.
That. The guy that takes 7 showers a day.
True that.
He's like, dogs can't lick me.
No.
His washing machine is never not running.
Where have those paws been?
Exactly. Wheels, where have they been?
I can tell you, nowhere good. This song's taking too long to get to the point. I love Sweet Emotion, but, like, get to the point.
Well, you got to have the build up there.
I know, but it's a little too slow and it's a little too long. Like, you got to get to the good stuff a little sooner.
Huh.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a lot of. I mean, I like Aerosmith, obviously. That's an all time great classic rock song, but it's a little bit too much build up.
Really.
A little bit too much buildup.
You wouldn't like Close to the Edge by Yes, then, if you don't like a long buildup.
I mean, no, I mean, I like a buildup, but I don't want it to be so long where if you're like listening to it, you're like, all right, just get to the part.
But by the way, you used a term for Yes the other day that I had never heard before.
Prog rock?
Yeah,
Prog rock.
Yeah.
Had you known that?
Yeah, I know.
Okay,
I guess it's Rush.
Yeah,
the only person who didn't know what prog rock was.
Yeah.
Well, it happens.
It's not really my
I always thought you were a progressive.
Genre.
Progressive.
Oh, I like progressive rock.
Yeah, you're a progressive.
King Crimson.
You look
King
like
Crimson,
one.
Yeah.
an advisor over at the St. Louis Board of Aldermen. You're so in, so progressive.
Yeah, I do. They'd love me over there.
Are you guys, Michael, you said something last segment about, like, you don't know, you're not sure if you can believe what you're seeing when you're looking at it online. And it just kind of jogged my, the thought we talked about earlier. Like, are you guys, is Twitter going crazy for you guys too?
Yes.
So, like, the ads I'm getting are insane. Last week we talked about this on DGS. Rachel was irritated by it. My wife texted and she's like, I'm getting the same ones. There's these nonstop bra ads that women are getting, and it's like an older woman who's like using scissors and cutting her bra, and then it goes into a bra ad, right? And it's super weird, and it was, I mean, it's super cringe when you look at it.
Wait till you get to be my age. I'm starting to get bra ads.
But like,
and
what we found out with that one was, if you blocked it, it didn't matter because it has endless handles. Hmm. Like, they have like thousands of accounts all sending the same thing out. And I'm seeing that for other things. I'm seeing that right now for anti-vax ads.
Wow.
I'm seeing that for Saudi Arabia ads.
Right.
Wow. You know, we talk about live and sports washing. I'm looking at an ad right now on Twitter from December 20th. I bookmarked it because I wanted to talk about this. But it's just a tweet, and it is an ad. This is not just a tweet. It's FT Partner Content is the handle, which means nothing to me. But it says, Saudi Arabia is not building the cities of the future, but the cities of many futures. And then click this image of that, you know, that long city that they're going to build that looks like a mirror. Like, they're using Twitter to try to soften their image, which is obviously what they're doing with Liv. They're sports washing. But I'm seeing that. I'm seeing, like, ads for the anti-vaxxers are putting ads out now, like 3-minute long videos that are coming in the form of an ad. And I don't know how to put this politely, but over the weekend I saw another set of ads, and I blocked one or two, and then they just kept coming. Was an ad for, let's just call it,
porn,
a male enhancement supplement. And in the background, there's a dude who's shirtless and he's just shredded, right? I mean, like, you know, he looks like he's a bodybuilder. Yeah, like Michael Kelly.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, you can be bigger and stronger. And then it continues on, and they've got the eggplant emoji all over this ad. And the guy that's toward the front is just in underwear. And there's a lot of there.
Yeah.
And it's very prominent.
He's got a billy club hidden
there. Yeah. He's like, yes. I've gotten
that same ad.
It's like a Louisville slugger. And it's like, what are we doing? Like, just putting giant members.
Well, I don't know that we are.
I mean,
no,
like,
I think that particular, because I am not getting that in my Instagram feed. I'm only seeing it on my Twitter. The other thing that's happening on my Twitter, I mean, I was telling the guys in the off, about 80% of what I follow, or 50% of what I follow is politics. The rest is sports and pop culture. And of that 50%, 80% is probably left to center. But the algorithm sends me the most extreme right-wing stuff.
Really?
And I don't get it because it's not going to register with me. It's not like I'm going to follow. And so I'm beginning to think it's more intentional than it is circumstance.
I think part of it, too, is that a lot of major advertisers have just pulled out of that platform altogether. And so now they're selling to people with
Facebook and Instagram and that stuff.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, MyPillow on Twitter.
I mean, I wouldn't be okay with my pillow ads. I'm not going to buy one, but I mean, I have cheap old pillows and they're fine. I don't need anything. I don't need to get anything special. But like, I don't.
Freedom pillows.
Well, that's a good point. I probably need to get those. Here's what I don't understand.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't understand why Elon bought Twitter to begin with.
Ego.
And
yes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But even with all of this, all of the quote unquote lost value of Twitter, his net worth has gone up. He's still the richest man on earth. Isn't it a little weird that the richest man on earth is so desperate, I will take any random stupid product's money? Like, why?
He's charging $8 for a blue check mark.
Well, this is my point.
Yeah.
Like, who? I saw this. He could lose all of the $40 billion that he spent on Twitter. It doesn't even. He's still the richest man in the world.
Yeah.
By a lot.
Yeah.
So what are we even? This is why I say, what are we even doing? At what point do you not look at this and feel shame? Like, you're the richest man in the world, and you're just accepting money from people that want to put big old,
right? Those
big old
that
billy clubs
members, like, prominently in an ad for, you know, a supplement that's supposed to make it grow larger.
Yeah, you should,
and
you should want Rolex to be advertising on there.
I mean, and yes, aren't
Johnson's
you?
Just all over the place.
yes, exactly. Johnson's is the good way to put it. Thank you for that. I guess that's kind of where I'm going is, at what is there no shame? Like, the richest man in the world is taking ads from the dumbest product. I mean, most of what you see on the ads are like horribly made, low class, like Chinese products that are just they're you can tell they're trash.
Tell you what you don't see on there is Johnson and Johnson.
You're right.
No, right.
They don't advertise right. Ever since he did that anti-Semitic stuff.
But if you're so brilliant, if you're such a successful, I mean, you want to go to Mars and you are like legitimately doing great things with SpaceX, like interesting things, and yet you're also like selling these lame, terrible ads because you've scared everyone else
away.
He's
and we've all got issues, but I mean, this guy's got issues. I mean, it's and he's demonstrated that now to all of us by buying Twitter.
Who do you think's got more issues?
Who, he or Donald Trump?
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's really interesting. I think they have a lot of the same issues. And I think the root of them, I'm no psychiatrist, but I think the root of them is a profound insecurity.
Daddy issues.
Yeah. Well, whatever it is. But I, you know, for all of the people to talk about Donald Trump and the strength that he has and da-da-da, I mean, when you look at him and you look at his rhetoric, and I think Elon Musk is much the same, they are profoundly insecure people. And it manifests itself in their attitudes and behaviors.
Well, to that point, he's the richest man, and the other guy was the most powerful man on the planet. Are they connecting because most of us see ourselves in them? We're insecure?
Oh, I think, yeah.
Hey, there's a person who knows how to deal with their insecurities.
I think with Trump, there's a lot of that. People say this guy just gets up, says whatever the hell he's thinking, and you know, people wish they could do that. And I think that definitely played a role in why he did resonate.
I think that's true with Elon, too. I think a lot of the Elon bros are like, he gets to say whatever he wants. Yeah. I wish I could do that. And I don't wish I could do that. But you can't, because if you do, you'll get fired. Nobody's going to fire Elon because he's the richest man in the world. He owns all the stuff.
Yeah.
What I can never understand, and this is why I think, to a degree, I'm not saying you're bat crap crazy or anything, but to a degree, to reach that level of wealth, you have to have something wrong with you. Because at some point, don't you go, I won, I'm good.
No.
Because if I'm in that spot, if I'm Elon, the last thing I'm doing is seeking attention on Twitter. I'm on a beach somewhere. I'm just doing whatever I want every day, all day, nonstop. I'm having fun every day. Because I'm so rich, I don't need to do anything else.
I think the fundamental rule of stuff and things is that you can never have enough. And I think for most people, enough of whatever, people that collect precious moments, you can never have enough. But
when people do that,
yeah,
we call them hoarders.
Right.
When people get too much of anything, we call them hoarders, and then we have interventions. Yet to be a billionaire, you are a hoarder. You're just hoarding. You're hoarding wealth.
Right.
But that's okay. We look at that and we're like, totally fine. You guys go ahead. And by the way, I'm not saying there should be laws about it. I'm just saying we can look at them and say there's clearly something. Now, I don't think there was necessarily anything wrong with or there is anything wrong with Warren Buffett. He doesn't strike me as the crazy person that needs attention all the time. He's in the game, and the game to him is the mental side of this, and it happens to make him money. Some of these guys cannot get enough attention to satisfy them.
Well, attention is
they have a black hole inside them.
For Warren Buffett, it might be money. He can't get enough money.
Right. Does he strike you that way? Because he doesn't spend it.
Yeah, well, he doesn't care about spending.
I think at that level, these guys just have an unnatural drive to succeed and a next-level ambition. Like, even Tom Brady, I mean, he was never fulfilled. He blew up his marriage just to come back for one more year.
That's where I was going to go is that, I mean, you always hear these stories about doctors who get what they call a God complex because, you know, they can save lives, and all of a sudden they start to believe their own press. And I think that's what happens. I mean, when you, especially in the culture and society we live in today, and this isn't new, you can think back to the Rockefellers, the J.P. Morgans of the world, we've always given deity status almost like to rich people. We look to them for so many, I mean, is Elon really, we all know what he thinks on world policy and stuff because he's rich and we had to ask him and we wanted to know, but is he any smarter on this stuff than us? No, he came up with a good idea on, you know, let's make cars that are just a giant golf cart. And he figured that out and how to commercialize it and started a new whole industry. But I think he believes most of the stuff. Because if Elon Musk walked into this building right now, even if we had a Cardinal game, I bet they'd interrupt it to talk to him.
I would call him names. I would make him very unhappy. Because I know that he needs the other.
Well, he does need the other.
He needs the ass kissing and I'm not giving it to him.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a lot of people.
I'm going to give him the opposite because what he actually needs is people to tell him no and people to tell him that's stupid. Because so many, all of us have that in our lives. We have family members, friends, husbands, wives. We all have in our lives the people that are like, stop being an idiot. You're ruining the party.
Yeah, but
and
I don't
people
think
at that level don't have anybody that tells them that.
That is correct.
He can't help it and we give him attention. I mean, if you're Donald Trump, you were the most powerful person on the planet. And now you're going back and attacking the director of Home Alone 2 because he said you know something about you in 1980? Like, really?
It goes back to my point. There's something wrong with the people that are like this.
Right.
Talk some football. I know we did a little bit early, but we got our resident football analyst in here, Junior.
How's it going?
Where do we want to go first? We already did the Taylor Swift thing, so we don't have to do that anymore, unless we missed something there. But I'm fascinated by a couple of things. Obviously, you know, sports dork. I'm really interested to get the room's thoughts on this whole Russell Wilson thing.
Yeah.
Because this is, yes, it's a football topic, but I think it's also a bit beyond that, too. When it comes to terms of a contract and the spirit of a contract and the spirit of a rule versus the reality of the situation. And for those that don't know, Russell Wilson has been benched by the Denver Broncos, not for performance, even though they're saying it's for performance, but because if he gets hurt in these last two games, his money for 2025 then becomes.
What's up, little psychos? I'm Investigator Slater, host of the Psychopedia podcast. Psychopedia is a true crime podcast delivering raw, real, and absolutely gripping episodes every single week. I dig deep to uncover fascinating details of heinous true crime cases while exploring criminology and psychology theories. I take you into the absolute darkest corners of the human psyche, my favorite territory, and present cases like you've never heard them before. Follow and listen to Psychopedia everywhere you get your podcasts.
Song's taking too long to get to the point. I love Sweet Emotion, but like, get to the point.
Well, you got to have the build up there.
Well, yeah, I know, but it's a little too slow and it's a little too long. Like, you got to get to the good stuff a little sooner.
Huh.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a lot of. I mean, I like Aerosmith, obviously. That's an all time great classic rock song, but it's a little bit too much build up.
Really.
A little bit too much buildup.
You wouldn't like Close to the Edge by Yes, then, if you don't like
I mean, no, I mean, I like a buildup, but I don't want it to be so long where if you're like listening to it, like, all right, just get to the part.
But by the way, you used a term for Yes the other day that I had never heard before.
Prog rock?
Prog rock. Yeah. Had you known that?
Yeah, I know.
Okay,
I guess it's Rush.
Yeah, yes. The only person who didn't know what prog rock was.
Yeah.
Well, it happens.
It's not really my
I always thought you were a progressive.
Genre.
Progressive.
Oh, I like progressive rock.
Yeah, you're a progressive. Yeah.
King Crimson.
You look
King
like
Crimson,
one.
Yeah.
An advisor over at the St. Louis Board of Aldermen. You're so so progressive.
Yeah, I do. They'd love me over there.
Are you guys, Michael, you said something last segment about, like, you don't know, you're not sure if you can believe what you're seeing when you're looking at it online. And it just kind of jogged the thought we talked about earlier. Like, are you guys, is Twitter going crazy for you guys too?
Yes.
So, like, the ads I'm getting are insane. Last week we talked about this on DGS. Rachel was irritated by it. My wife texted and she's like, I'm getting the same ones. There's these nonstop bra ads that women are getting. And it's like an older woman who's like using scissors and cutting her bra, and then it goes into a bra ad, right? And it's super weird, and it's super cringe when
Wait, wait till you get to be my age. I'm starting to get bra ads.
But like,
and
what we found out with that one was, if you blocked it, it didn't matter because it has endless handles. They have like thousands of accounts all sending the same thing out, and I'm seeing that for other things. I'm seeing that right now for anti-vax ads.
Wow.
I'm seeing that for Saudi Arabia ads.
Right.
You know, we talk about live and sports washing. I'm looking at an ad right now on Twitter from December 20th. I bookmarked it because I wanted to talk about this. But it's just a tweet, and it is an ad. This is not just a tweet. It's FT Partner Content is the handle, which means nothing to me. But it says, Saudi Arabia is not building the cities of the future, but the cities of many futures. And then click this image of that, you know, that long city that they're going to build that looks like a mirror. Like, they're using Twitter to try to soften their image, which is obviously what they're doing with Liv. They're sports washing. But I'm seeing that. I'm seeing, like, ads for the anti-vaxxers are putting ads out now, like 3-minute long videos that are coming in the form of an ad. And I don't know how to put this politely, but over the weekend I saw another set of ads, and I blocked one or two, and then they just kept coming. Was an ad for, let's just call it,
porn,
a male enhancement supplement. And in the background, there's a dude who's shirtless and he's just shredded, right? I mean, like, you know, he looks like he's a bodybuilder. Yeah, like Michael Kelly.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, you can be bigger and stronger. And then it continues on, and they've got the eggplant emoji all over this ad. And the guy that's toward the front is just in underwear. And there's a lot of there.
Yeah.
And it's very prominent.
It's got a billy club hidden
there,
in it.
Yeah. It's like, yes. I've
gotten that same ad.
It's like a Louisville Slugger. And it's like, what are we doing, like, just putting giant members?
Well, I don't know that we are.
I
think that particular, because I am not getting that in my Instagram feed. I'm only seeing it on my Twitter. The other thing that's happening on my Twitter, I mean, I was telling the guys in the off, about 80% of what I follow, or 50% of what I follow is politics. The rest is sports and pop culture. And of that 50%, 80% is probably left to center. But the algorithm sends me the most extreme right-wing stuff.
Really?
And I don't get it because it's not going to register with me. It's not like I'm going to follow. And so I'm beginning to think it's more intentional than it is circumstance.
I think part of it, too, is that a lot of major advertisers have just pulled out of that platform altogether. And so now they're selling to people with
Facebook and Instagram and that stuff.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, MyPillow on Twitter.
That's it.
I mean, I wouldn't be okay with my pillow ads. I'm not going to buy one, but I mean, I have cheap old pillows and they're fine. I don't need anything. I don't need to get anything special. But like,
These are freedom pillows.
That's a good point. I probably need to get those. Here's what I don't understand.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't understand why Elon bought Twitter to begin with.
Ego.
And
yes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But even with all of this, all of the quote unquote lost value of Twitter. His net worth has gone up. He's still the richest man on earth. Isn't it a little weird that the richest man on earth is so desperate? I will take any random stupid product's money. Like, what?
He's charging $8 for a blue check mark.
Why? This is my point.
Yeah.
Like, who? He. I saw this. He could lose all of the $40 billion that he spent on Twitter. It doesn't even. He's still the richest man in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
By a lot.
Yeah.
So what are we even? This is why I say, what are we even doing? At what point do you not look at this and feel shame? Like, you're the richest man in the world, and you're just accepting money from people that want to put big old,
right? Those
big old
that
Billy Clubs
members, like, prominently in an ad for, you know, a supplement that's supposed to make it grow larger.
Yeah, you should, want Rolex to be advertising on there.
I mean, and yes, aren't
Johnson's
you?
Just all over the place.
yes, exactly. Johnson's is the good way to put it. Thank you for that. I guess that's kind of where I'm going is, at what is there no shame? Like, the richest man in the world is taking ads from the dumbest product. I mean, most of what you see on the ads are like horribly made, low class, like Chinese products that are just they're you can tell they're trash.
Tell you what you don't see on there is Johnson and Johnson.
You're right.
No, right.
They don't advertise right. Ever since he did that anti-Semitic stuff.
But if you're so brilliant, if you're such a successful, I mean, you want to go to Mars and you are like legitimately doing great things with SpaceX, like interesting things, and yet you're also like selling these lame, terrible ads because you've scared everyone else away.
He's and we've all got issues, but I mean, this guy's got issues. I mean, it's and he's demonstrated that now to all of us by buying Twitter.
Who do you think's got more issues?
Who, he or Donald Trump?
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's really interesting. I think they have a lot of the same issues, and I think the root of them. I'm no psychiatrist. But I think the root of them is a profound insecurity.
Daddy issues.
Yeah. Well, whatever it is. But I, you know, for all of the people to talk about Donald Trump and the strength that he has and da-da-da, I mean, when you look at him and you look at his rhetoric, and I think Elon Musk is much the same, they are profoundly insecure people. And it manifests itself in their attitudes and behaviors.
Well, to that point, he's the richest man, and the other guy was the most powerful man on the planet. Are they connecting because most of us see ourselves in them? We're insecure?
Oh, I think, yeah.
Hey, there's a person who knows how to deal with their insecurities.
I think with Trump, there's a lot of that. People say this guy just gets up, says whatever the hell he's thinking, and you know, people wish they could do that. And I think that definitely played a role in why he did resonate.
I think that's true with Elon, too. I think a lot of the Elon bros are like, he gets to say whatever he wants. Yeah. I wish I could do that. And I don't wish, I could do that. But you can't, because if you do, you'll get fired. Nobody's going to fire Elon because he's the richest man in the world. He owns all the stuff.
Yeah.
What I can never understand, and this is why I think, to a degree, I'm not saying you're bat crap crazy or anything, but to a degree, to reach that level of wealth, you have to have something wrong with you. Because at some point, don't you go, I won, I'm good.
No.
Because if I'm in that spot, if I'm Elon, the last thing I'm doing is seeking attention on Twitter. I'm on a beach somewhere. I'm just doing whatever I want every day, all day, nonstop. I'm having fun every day. Because I'm so rich, I don't need to do anything else.
I think the fundamental rule of stuff and things is that you can never have enough. And I think for most people, enough of whatever, people that collect precious moments, you can never have enough. But
when people do that,
yeah,
we call them hoarders.
Right.
When people get too much of anything, we call them hoarders, and then we have interventions. Yet to be a billionaire, you are a hoarder. You're just hoarding wealth.
Right.
But that's okay. We look at that and we're like, totally fine. You guys go ahead and by the way, I'm not saying there should be laws about it. I'm just saying we can look at them and say there's clearly something. Now, I don't think there was necessarily anything wrong with or there is anything wrong with Warren Buffett. he doesn't strike me as the crazy person that needs attention all the time. He's in the game, and the game to him is the mental side of this, and it happens to make him money. Some of these guys cannot get enough attention to satisfy them.
Well, attention is
they have a black hole inside them.
For Warren Buffett, it might be money. He can't get enough money.
Right. But does he strike you that way? Because he doesn't spend it.
Yeah, well, he doesn't care about spending.
I think at that level, these guys just have an unnatural drive to succeed and a next-level ambition. Like, even Tom Brady, I mean, he was never fulfilled. He blew up his marriage just to come back for one more year.
That's where I was going to go is that, I mean, you always hear these stories about doctors who get what they call a God complex because, you know, they can save lives, and all of a sudden they start to believe their own press. And I think that's what happens. I mean, when you, especially in the culture and society we live in today, and this isn't new, you can think back to the Rockefellers, the J.P. Morgans of the world, we've always given deity status almost like to rich people. We look to them for so many, I mean, is Elon really, we all know what he thinks on world policy and stuff because he's rich and we had to ask him and we wanted to know, but is he any smarter on this stuff than us? No, he came up with a good idea on, you know, let's make cars that are just a giant golf cart. And he figured that out and how to commercialize it and started a new whole industry. But I think he believes most of the stuff. Because if Elon Musk walked into this building right now, even if we had a Cardinal game, I bet they'd interrupt it to talk to him.
I would call him names. I would make him very unhappy. Because I know that he needs the other.
Well, he does need the other.
He needs the ass kissing, and I'm not giving it to him.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a lot of people.
I'm going to give him the opposite, because what he actually needs is people to tell him no and people to tell him that's stupid. Because all of us have that in our lives. We have family members, friends, husbands, wives. We all have in our lives the people that are like, stop being an idiot. You're ruining the party.
Yeah, but
and
I don't
people
think
at
he
that
can
level don't have anybody that tells
no,
them that.
That is correct.
He can't help it, and we give him attention. I mean, if you're Donald Trump, you were the most powerful person on the planet. And now you're going back and attacking the director of Home Alone 2 because he said you know something about you in 1980? Like, really?
It goes back to my point. There's something wrong with the people that are like this.
Right.
Talk some football. I know we did a little bit early, but we got our resident football analyst in here, Junior.
How's it going?
Where are we going to go first? We already did the Taylor Swift thing, so we don't have to do that anymore, unless we missed something there. But I'm fascinated by a couple of things. Obviously, you know, sports dork. I'm really interested to get the room's thoughts on this whole Russell Wilson thing.
Yeah.
Because this is, yes, it's a football topic, but I think it's also a bit beyond that too. When it comes to terms of a contract and the spirit of a contract and the spirit of a rule versus the reality of the situation. And for those that don't know, Russell Wilson has been benched by the Denver Broncos, not for performance, even though they're saying it's for performance, but because if he gets hurt in these last two games, his money for 2025 then becomes guaranteed, and it's $37 million. So they don't want to risk the money, which, again, all fine and dandy, but I just don't know why we have to play this game. What do you guys think of just the game being played here? Because players do this, right? I mean, players, I'll use Miguel Cabrera as an example, has been terrible for years. He didn't retire. He didn't walk away from his guaranteed money. He just kept playing, even though he was terrible. He kept playing and kept making $32 million a year. I'm not sure there's a problem with this. But it is interesting the games we play, and it kind of ties into the money stuff we were just talking about.
Yeah, so it came out, this conversation happened a few weeks ago. They, you know, threatened to bench him over this, and then they won a few games, and then they, you know, finally took a loss, and it seems like Sean Payton has had enough with Russell Wilson. You know, they made a move this offseason that was kind of interesting. They signed Jared Stidham to be the backup quarterback at a, you know, pretty hefty cost for a backup. And it seems like Peyton was kind of ready in the back of his mind to make this move if he had to. And Russell Wilson has not performed at the level he did with Seattle at all. Didn't even come close. Last year was an unmitigated disaster. Now, they don't want to be on the hook for this money. And you know, they decided they'll just take the loss next year, take the dead cap space the next 2 years, and move on from Russell Wilson this offseason.
Yeah, and they could still do that, even if that money's guaranteed, but they would have to pay it to him.
Yep.
And if he and it's only if he gets hurt. Like, if he played the last two games and he didn't get hurt, there would be no issue there. What I'm curious, Michael, I wanted to get your thoughts on this as a union guy.
Oh, boy.
Because I'm surprised that the NFLPA is not making a bigger deal of this.
I don't know. It's a hard case to make when you got a guy who's with $150 million. I don't understand that players union and how it works, so I can't really speak to it.
I mean, so
I'd like somebody to give me $100 million to go away.
Yeah, I mean, nobody's, put it this way, nobody's crying. I'm not going to cry.
We probably start a GoFundMe.
Let's go.
I'm not going to cry a river for Russell Wilson.
Yeah.
Russell Wilson will never hurt for money the rest of his life.
He gets another place.
I'm sure somebody will give him a job. Yes. And it won't be for that, because he won't need it, because he's already getting this money. He's already guaranteed. He's already received a bunch, but he's going to get... He's got next year guaranteed already, which I think is $38-39 million. So I think he will definitely get a job. But the thing that I'm always fascinated by is the deceptive nature of this. Russell Wilson is seventh in the NFL in quarterback rating. Now, quarterback rating is not a great number. All right, there are better analytical ways of looking at quarterbacks, but he is not one of the worst quarterbacks in the league. He is broken. He's not what he used to be. But if this were a football decision, you would have done this weeks ago. If this was based on how he's played this year, you wouldn't just wait until after you're eliminated. If you thought it was a football decision, you would have made the move sooner to improve your chances at making the playoffs. That's not what this is.
Yeah, and it tells you he's lost the locker room in a respect as well, because I know there was no love lost last year. He was getting preferential treatment under Hackett. He had his own office. He had his own quarterback coach. When they had that game in Europe, he was warming up on the plane, high-stepping throughout the aisle, and just corny. And
yeah.
I think a lot he was getting preferential treatment, and a lot of guys resented that.
You saw last week, right? He got sacked on a play. Not one of his offensive linemen went to help him up.
Yeah. Wow.
They all turned and walked the other direction while he got up on his own.
Well, so this is totally a business decision, right?
Yes!
Like, this isn't a performance decision.
Let me throw this at you.
Yeah.
All right, so Russell Wilson has thrown for 3,000 yards, which in the modern NFL is not that big a deal. If he finished the season, he'd be 3,500 passing yards. 26 touchdowns, 8 interceptions.
Fine numbers.
Does that strike you as someone that is being benched for football reasons?
No.
No! So just say it!
Right.
Don't lie! You're benching him because you don't want to guarantee him $37 million if he gets hurt. I find that to be perfectly fine. It is within the rules. You're allowed to make that decision. There's nothing in the contract that says you can't do this.
No, but I bet it's going to come up in the next contract, because he may not be the last player this happens
now, this,
to.
Now, this is what I wonder, and there are other situations like this in sports. Now, so just branching this off, and I know we're going to talk about Mizzou's bowl game with Howard Richards a little bit later on. I might be interested to get his thoughts on the whole name, image, and likeness and the transfer portal and the impact those things are having, along with the NFL draft, on players just opting out of bowl games. And I see a lot of reaction from people like, well, they took the money. They should have to give back the money if they don't play in the bowl game. And my question to you is, A, why? And B, you want to be the school that goes to claw back money from a guy? You think you're going to get the next blue chip guy if you're telling people that? Because this guy's looking out for his own future. Yeah.
And I do wonder if that might be a stipulation in some of these going forward, that it's, barring injury, you have to play in the bowl game if we make it.
No way it happens. Because you'll never get the blue chip guy. The blue chip guy will say, I'm not signing that. I can go to Alabama and not sign that. I can get the same money from Miami, and they're not going to make me commit to that. That's the thing that drives me nuts about the way we're still stuck in college football with people wanting it to be like it used to be. The reason we're in this world now in college football is because the NCAA refused for 50 years to ever adapt. They just forced it to be the same until they started losing in court, and now they have no control over it. It's too late, and you're not putting the genie back in the bottle. You screwed up. You should have been doing this for the last 25 years, building this system on your own, adding this voluntarily so that you could then have some control over the transfer portal and name, image, and license and all that. But because you wouldn't, you've now lost in court, and you can't. It's out of your hands, and people want it to be the old way. But you know what? This is better than the old way. It's an unpopular opinion. It's better than the old way because, A, we get an actual playoff, and, B, the players now have the same rights to look out for themselves as the coaches have always had. Why has it always been okay for coaches to shop for jobs and leave and do all that, but, oh, my God, when a player does it, that's terrible. Agree?
I agree with that, yeah.
Hear, hear.
Coaches have been doing it forever.
Yeah.
I'm
Good
with
man.
You.
Good man.
I'm with you.
We got to talk some football. I know we did a little bit early, but we got our resident football analyst in here, Junior.
How's it going? How's it going?
Where do we want to go first? We already did the Taylor Swift thing, so we don't have to do that anymore unless we missed something there. But I'm fascinated by a couple of things. Obviously, you know, sports dork. I'm really interested to get the room's thoughts on this whole Russell Wilson thing.
Yeah.
Because this is, yes, it's a football topic, but I think it's also a bit beyond that, too, when it comes to terms of a contract and the spirit of a contract and the spirit of a rule versus the reality of the situation. And for those that don't know, Russell Wilson has been benched by the Denver Broncos, yep, not for performance, even though they're saying it's for performance, but because if he gets hurt in these last two games, his money for 2025 then becomes guaranteed, and it's $37 million. So they don't want to risk the money, which, again, all fine and dandy, but I just don't know why we have to play this game. What do you guys think of just the game being played here? Because players do this, right? I mean, players, I'll use Miguel Cabrera as an example, has been terrible for years. He didn't retire. He didn't walk away from his guaranteed money. He just kept playing, even though he was terrible. He kept playing and kept making $32 million a year. I'm not sure there's a problem with this, but it is interesting the games we play, and it kind of ties into the money stuff we were just talking about.
Yeah, so it came out, this conversation happened a few weeks ago. They, you know, threatened to bench him over this, and then they won a few games, and then they, you know, finally took a loss, and it seems like Sean Payton has had enough with Russell Wilson. You know, they made a move this offseason that was kind of interesting. They signed Jared Stidham to be the backup quarterback at a, you know, pretty hefty cost for a backup. And it seems like Peyton was kind of ready in the back of his mind to make this move if he had to. And Russell Wilson has not performed at the level he did with Seattle at all. Didn't even come close. Last year was an unmitigated disaster. And now they don't want to be on the hook for this money. And, you know, they decided they'll just take the loss next year, take the dead cap space the next 2 years, and move on from Russell Wilson this offseason.
Yeah. And they could still do that, even if that money's guaranteed, but they would have to pay it to him.
Yep.
And if he and it's only if he gets hurt. Like, if he played the last two games and he didn't get hurt, there would be no issue there. What I'm curious, Michael, I wanted to get your thoughts on this as a union guy.
Oh, boy.
Because I'm surprised that the NFLPA is not making a bigger deal of this.
I don't know. It's a hard case to make when you got a guy who's with $150 million. I don't understand that players' union and how it works. So I can't really speak to it.
I mean, so
I'd like somebody to give me $100 million to go away.
Yeah, I mean, nobody's, put it this way, nobody's crying. I'm not going to cry.
We probably start a GoFundMe
page. Let's go.
I'm not going to cry a river for Russell Wilson.
Yeah.
Russell Wilson will never hurt for money the rest of his life.
He gets another place.
I'm sure somebody will give him a job. Yes. And it won't be for that because he won't need it because he's already getting this money. He's already guaranteed. He's already received a bunch, but he's going to get, he's got next year guaranteed already, which I think is $38, $39 million. I think he will definitely get a job, but the thing that I'm always fascinated by is the deceptive nature of this. Russell Wilson is seventh in the NFL in quarterback rating. Now, quarterback rating is not a great number, all right? There are better analytical ways of looking at quarterbacks, but he is not one of the worst quarterbacks in the league. He is broken. He's not what he used to be. But if this were a football decision, you would have done this weeks ago. If this was based on how he's played this year, you wouldn't just wait until after you're eliminated. If you thought it was a football decision, you would have made the move sooner to improve your chances at making the playoffs. That's not what this is.
Yeah, and it tells you he's lost the locker room and a respect as well, because I know he was. There was no love lost last year. He was getting preferential treatment under Hackett. He had his own office. He had his own quarterback coach. When they had that game in Europe, he was warming up on the plane, high-stepping throughout the aisle, and just corny. And I think a lot he was getting preferential treatment, and a lot of guys resented that.
You saw last week, right? He got sacked on a play. Not one of his offensive linemen went to help him up.
Yeah. Wow.
They all turned and walked the other direction while he got up on his own.
Well, so this is totally a business decision, right?
Yes! Like,
this isn't a performance decision.
Let me throw this at you.
Yeah.
All right, so Russell Wilson has thrown for 3,000 yards, which in the modern NFL is not that big a deal. If he finished the season, he'd be 3,500 passing yards. 26 touchdowns, 8 interceptions.
Fine numbers.
Does that strike you as someone that is being benched for football reasons?
No.
No! So just say it!
Right.
Don't lie! You're benching him because you don't want to guarantee him $37 million if he gets hurt. I find that to be perfectly fine. It is within the rules. You're allowed to make that decision. There's nothing in the contract that says you can't do this.
No, but I bet it's going to come up in the next contract because he may not be the last player this happens
to. Now, this is what I wonder, and there are other situations like this in sports. Now, so just branching this off, and I know we're going to talk about Mizzou's bowl game with Howard Richards a little bit later on. I might be interested to get his thoughts on the whole name, image, and likeness and the transfer portal and the impact those things are having, along with the NFL draft, on players just opting out of bowl games. And I see a lot of reaction from people like, well, they took the money. They should have to give back the money if they don't play in the bowl game. And my question to you is, A, why? And B, you want to be the school that goes to claw back money from a guy? You think you're going to get the next blue chip guy if you're telling people that? Because this guy's looking out for his own future. Yeah.
And I do wonder if that might be a stipulation in some of these going forward, that it's, barring injury, you have to play in the bowl game if we make it.
No way it happens. Because you'll never get the blue chip guy. The blue chip guy will say, I'm not signing that. I can go to Alabama and not sign that. I can get the same money from Miami, and they're not going to make me commit to that. That's the thing that drives me nuts about the way we're still stuck in college football with people wanting it to be like it used to be. The reason we're in this world now in college football is because the NCAA refused for 50 years to ever adapt. They just forced it to be the same until they started losing in court, and now they have no control over it. It's too late, and you're not putting the genie back in the bottle. You screwed up. You should have been doing this for the last 25 years, building this system on your own, adding this voluntarily so that you could then have some control over the transfer portal and name, image, and license and all that. But because you wouldn't, you've now lost in court, and you can't. It's out of your hands, and people want it to be the old way. But you know what? This is better than the old way. It's an unpopular opinion. It's better than the old way because, A, we get an actual playoff, and, B, the players now have the same rights to look out for themselves as the coaches have always had. Why has it always been okay for coaches to shop for jobs and leave and do all that, but, oh, my God, when a player does it, that's terrible? Agree?
I agree with that, yeah.
Here, here.
Coaches have been doing it forever.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
Good man.
I'm with you.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, you'll hear true stories that will intrigue you, inspire you, and make you laugh.
He said, is there anything in your diet that might be spiking your blood sugar? I said, sometimes I eat pizza until I'm unconscious. He said, I think that might be it.
For real stories live on stage from comedians, astronauts, accountants, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.